Hello, everybody, and welcome to the episode 4 of the Office Hours podcast. Sadly, due to some technical reason, a big chunk of this podcast haven't been properly captured. I've lost the audio for maybe first half an hour of it. But thankfully, we have noticed this issue and still managed to capture the last hour of our conversation. And you can enjoy that. Today we have with us Mo as usual, and now we will proceed with the podcast. Enjoy. That is unfortunate. We'll have to figure out a way to seamlessly cut it.
Yeah. But I forgot. We're talking about... I was asking you about how, like, I don't think, like, most companies like invest a lot in like desktop applications. Like I remember about a while ago, like it was the thing, like if you have a solution, you make it like installable, mm-hmm. and you buy the CD and then, or like whatever, you buy the software somewhere and then install. But I don't know if a lot of people actually do that these days.
No.
So like,
yeah, people don't do that.
So
yeah.
Maybe that explains why there is not a lot of performance optimization in like the desktop applications, or maybe I'm just making an excuse for it. But
I think there's still some desktop applications that are fast. It's more that the mainstream applications are not, and the web applications are, I don't even know if they can be, because everybody kind of has these synthetic benchmarks. It's like, oh, hey, we have new React 18 with threads and now, or with fibers or whatever they call it. And we have 60 FPS with so many different divs being rendered on screen at once. And you look at it, it's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. But then you start building an actual business application and eventually it just turns to complete crapshoot and everything's just slow and impossible to optimize. And I don't know. I think that people may be going to a new social network because it looks shinier, but social network is not like a productivity application that I would really care for. It's more that like the applications that I use on a daily to do my work, like, I don't want those to be slow. I want those to be fast.
Yeah.
And I don't want my tooling to be slow. And it is slow. Like, I don't want my CI jobs to be slow. And they are very slow. Like, it takes the VM several minutes to just begin executing our job. And then our job has to, like, do all of these different steps before it starts executing the actual CI portion. So now at every stage, I'm, like, waiting for 5 minutes for every stage to launch. And that's like 5 minutes where I don't receive feedback about what I'm doing. And then at the end, it tends to like, oh, hey, it failed at the very end. So here's an error. You just waited 10 minutes. Now, you know, go again, round two, make a change. So it lacks this immediacy where even with the new tooling, right? Like you have, I don't know, you have your Webpack dev server, you make a change, it recompiles the app and it like refreshes the page. And sometimes it's fast, but it doesn't work perfectly. Sometimes it tends to get the state corrupted, so like you lose whatever you input it or something. Like it's almost good, but there's all these rough edges that you constantly trip up over. And I was talking today to someone and I said, like, a lot of the things in software dev, it's basically like Stockholm syndrome. We just get used to how horribly crappy everything is and we stop asking questions about it. I think, like, when you're a junior developer, the biggest benefit that you have is that you can ask these questions. You can ask the question, why are we doing it like this? It seems silly to me.
And usually
people don't really have a good answer for that because the architecture might have been developed by somebody who's not with the company anymore and they just keep replicating what they know. And it's a bad architecture. But, you know, I was saying like if you can't refactor the whole thing in one go, you shouldn't start introducing new ways of doing things, because now you're just proliferating additional ways of doing things in the same code base that are going to confuse people. They wouldn't necessarily know whether to do things the old way or the new way, or what is the old way, what is the new way. Like, if I'm a complete beginner to the code base and I come in and I see two different ways of doing things, how do I know which one is the correct one? And I remember working on an application where there were basically three or four different ways of doing things, because there has been some refactoring efforts that were like 60% done, and the remaining 40% remained as is. And then, you know, we realize, oh, hey, yeah, we shouldn't have been doing it that way. So they do another refactoring. So now there's like remnants of the first architecture, and then there's remnants of second architecture, and there's like a bunch of work for the third architecture. So it's called like a lava layers pattern, where like, you know, you have lava that's flowing, and then it cools down and hardens. And then like the next layer starts flowing over top of it. So you end up with like these layers. And so sometimes refactoring these apps isn't really possible. I think we talked about refactoring before, about how business doesn't value it as much.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. And it's still true. And I think also because of that, a lot of software is crap, is like people are not willing to touch it. And I think, in case of Jonathan's Blow's new compiler, he can afford to be fast because he's building it from scratch. He doesn't have to carry all of this baggage that everybody else has to carry. And I imagine in 10 years, it's probably going to be as slow as something that is like 10 years old today. So,
yeah.
But hey, so a guy can dream.
You know, like you mentioned, different types of like refactors, and then in your project, and then it got me thinking, because I wanted to talk to you about the conflict resolution. You know, has there ever been a time where like maybe you did something and then someone like changed what you did, and you find yourself feeling frustrated and to the point where like it actually led to a conflict or something like that? But
oh, like somebody actually like reverted to changes you made?
Yeah, I mean, I'm asking it up till now. Like, I don't think I've ever had this type of experience, but I imagine like in a scenario like this, it's like I've seen it to other people, but personally, it hasn't happened to me yet. But I imagine like if this kind of things happen, how do you plan to manage it? I remember one time there was one company like I was working for like a few years ago now. And then in the interview, one of the questions that was asked, like, oh, if someone says something or like ask you to do something that you don't think is right, and because the person is like a higher level or like a higher position to make you do it, and what would you do if it goes against your like your value, something like that, something like the answer was supposed to be like, you know
right,
managing conflict. But
yeah, I don't know if I haven't really been in a situation where somebody outright like reverted my code. I have been in situations where like your opinion isn't being valued or accepted. And it's one thing if you're a junior and you suggest something that is likely not going to work, and people say, hey, you know what, that's not really a great idea. But it's a different thing where you have experience in these matters and you offer some type of solution, and then it gets either completely ignored or like people like deliberately say, yeah, we're not doing that because we're doing things my way. Like, I've been in that situation, and it's not fun. And it's quite frustrating. And thankfully, I don't work at that company anymore. So I don't have to deal. I don't have to deal with it. But it does get really frustrating. Yeah. I remember back in the day, I was working at another company. That was like a whole bunch of years back. So I was definitely not as senior back then. Mm-hmm. But a lot of things were happening that were kind of weird to me. Like a bunch of managers from my original team have moved on to different companies, and I got reassigned to a different team that was doing things like very differently. And when I got reassigned to that team, in my mind, it felt like the team I was with, we were doing like really great work. We had all these cool patterns established for how we developed software. We shipped way more and way more often compared to other teams. We like barely had any rollbacks, if at all. So a lot of processes in our team were established in a way that everything was like very, very snappy. Like getting features to production was a breeze. It was not a problem for us. And so when I got on this other team, they were very, very heavily process oriented, but at the same time, it wasn't really working in a sense that they still haven't pushed anything meaningful in a very long time. So they had all of this process. They were like doing all these things all by the book that wasn't really getting them anywhere. And we had our process too. It's just our process was much smaller, way less bureaucratic, and we could go fast. And so I kind of had this, you know how they have like fundraisers and they have this like this little thermometer, and as they gain money, they like fill it up. And like when it hits the top, it means they've achieved their goal. And as a joke, I kind of had a whiteboard in my cubicle, and I've drawn a thermometer on this cubicle's whiteboard. And I said, when this thermometer fills up to the very top, I'll quit. And I was like putting in all the different things that were pissing me off. And if something like particularly egregious happens, I would like fill out a big section of that thermometer. And at one point in time, I believe, I don't remember what it was, but the company did something or they announced something that I thought like, wow, this is actually really good. So I went there and I erased a whole bunch of that thermometer. Because I said, like, well, they're doing things that I agree with now. It would be hypocritical of me not to. But yeah, it was kind of a joke, but kind of not really. Because, you know, there are frustrations at your job that a lot of people choose to deal with because it's like, hey, I need the paycheck. I don't really feel like I'm in a position to be looking for a new job right now. They have the rationalizations to stick with it, even though it could be like uncomfortable or frustrating, or they have to deal with assholes or something like that. And I think everybody is in that position, because I think like if you quit at any first provocation, that's not a good strategy either, right? That just shows inability to deal with annoying things in like short time. It's like, oh, you know, somebody didn't say hello to you at the office, you know, flip the table and quit. Like, that's a bad strategy, right? At the same time, if you come in there every day and somebody's being completely terrible to you and making your life miserable and you're there 10 years later, that's not a good strategy either. So you kind of have to find a point in time where you say, well, I tried, but clearly it's not working out. So it's time to part ways. And I think that, you know, if you have your virtual thermometer of how pissed off you are at the situation, you can also have on it, like when it hits the very top, I quit, no thinking about it. Like as soon as that happens, you just go to your manager and be like, I quit, have a nice day, right? And you have to be prepared to do it, because if it reaches that point and you don't quit, that entire exercise was basically for nothing. But also, somewhere before it reaches the point of you quitting, it turns into a point of, I'm not quitting yet, but I better start looking for other jobs, right?
Fair enough.
Just so that you give yourself that time to prepare. And I think that that works in many different scenarios, not just a job, right? I think that can apply in a lot of cases to like relationships with other people. You don't have to remain. I think like you have to make effort to make the best of the situation. But if you're putting the effort in and the situation doesn't change qualitatively, it's okay to walk away from it to save yourself a lot of grief and a lot of, you know, suffering.
You know, I agree totally, like walking away from like situations, so, like if it gets a bit too complicated, but I agree on the point where if it gets a bit too complicated, because nowadays, like when I talk to people, like some people that maybe they're just like starting out like in tech or maybe, you know, junior. And they talk to me about how some scenarios, and then I'm thinking, and then they feel frustrated. But I think like, it's like we discussed earlier, like in the earlier episodes, like if you're coming into this industry, you need to come with a mindset like it's not always like, you know, beds of roses, and like sometimes it feels good, sometimes it doesn't. And the thing is like, if you move around a lot, you think it's not always like the perfect teams in everywhere you go. So like it to be a different drummer, just a different stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same drama, it's just a different stage, you know? Like, yeah, yeah, it's yeah. just, it doesn't make it like less, because in the beginning of my career, like earlier, I think I also did like moving, like, you know, because like agile then, you don't have like a lot of, not that I have as much responsibility now, but like then I didn't feel like I needed, had much reason to stay as much. Mm-hmm. So, like, when things get a bit too complicated, you know, like, that's it. I'm on the next train. But the thing is, like, I feel like when it comes to maturity as well, like, as a developer, I think all these things, they come in with, like, experience with how to manage them. Mm-hmm. For example, like, I was gonna talk to you today about like some soft skills to have as a developer, because I think like when it comes to like working with people, there will always be clashes sometimes, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you just need to like learn how to, which way works best for you. For example, me, I'm very calm, so like I don't really like get, my button doesn't get pressed easily. So like, it takes a lot. It takes a really lot. So maybe it feels like I never get angry or something, but I know other people who don't have as much patience. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, like, different people will have a different way to manage this type of thing. So I was just wondering, like, in your own experience, like, how do you manage these things? Like, because of course you wouldn't just like move just because someone asked you stupid questions, or like made you do things you don't want to do, or like, you know.
I think that, as you said, it becomes different with more experience, because like I for some reason when you were talking about it, I had this picture in my head. I was thinking like you have to have some tolerance for pain and discomfort, because you have to identify, I guess, the source of the pain and discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this silly picture in my head. It's like, you know, you can go to the gym and you can lift weights and you can feel pain and discomfort from like your muscles compensating for the work, for the exercise that you had, right? But it's ultimately beneficial for you.
Yeah.
Or you could go to the gym and drop a bunch of weights on your leg and feel a lot of pain and discomfort that is in no way beneficial to you at all.
Yeah.
And if you cannot tell the difference between the two, you know, metaphorically speaking, like how would you know that if I feel this pain and discomfort, I have to stop doing that, or I have to persist because it's actually ultimately for my own good, right? And that understanding comes with experience.
Exactly.
And back to the whole interpersonal angle and soft skills. You know, people have their personalities, and there isn't really much you can do about it. And I think, you know, a lot of companies talk about company culture, and they say, oh, company culture, this company culture, that. And in a lot of ways, there is like this overt company culture, and there is like the actual company culture. There's one that they declare on paper, and it's kind of a marketing spiel. It's like, oh, our company has great culture. It's like, well, every which company is going to tell you, yeah, we have terrible culture. Don't come working for us. We suck. Like, we're just horrible people. You're not going to like it here. Like, why do you even bother applying? Go away. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's going to say how great their culture is. And on paper, you know, they have this culture, and they have like all of the policies and this and that. But people are ultimately people. And everybody has like their temperaments and how they react to things and how they deal with stress. And I think the true culture is more about the collection of people that are working together. Because for most of my career, I have been blessed enough that the people I was working with, we were genuinely as close as it gets to being like on the same wavelength in terms of like how we approach things. And in a couple of instances, whenever people were brought into the team, there was no consideration for that part. It was like, oh, they have the technical skill. Do they mesh well with everybody else on a team? Who cares? And that ended up being very bad, because that's the conflicts arose. And because people were not compatible, there was no way of meaningfully resolving that conflict. The only meaningful way of resolving that conflict is to have the team being consistent in terms of how they mesh together on interpersonal level. And so in my case, I realized that the rest of the people seemingly, I don't know if they work well together or they just don't say anything. And if I'm the odd one out, like I'm not fitting in culturally, and I'm not having any fun. And because my approach creates conflict, or I perceive their approach as creating a conflict with me, because it's a two-way street, right? I might dislike what they're saying, but they also might dislike what I'm saying, just because we're like looking at this problem from two completely different angles. Like there's no alignment there. And my tolerance for it, eventually I didn't have any. And so ultimately sometimes it's like the only way of fixing it is not being there. And it's like either you get rid of the person who's reading it for everybody, or if you can't obviously point out to the person that's reading it for everybody, you're probably that person.
Yeah, true. True. But you see, like, some people, like you said, like, there are different types of personalities. Mm-hmm. But sometimes what I also notice, like, we have different cultures too. So, like, even though, like, we have the same goal, we're on the same team, we professionally care enough about each other. And, but at least, like, professionally, you know, because sometimes, like, you can have work relationships that can be more than just work relationships. But I've seen scenarios where like people can make jokes, or like, you know, just out of the fact that we have like good relationships. So you can have like, even not just like because you change my stuff, my work, maybe because he just said something that was supposed to be funny to you, but wasn't funny. But wasn't funny to everyone else, you know. Like, I think that too is something that comes with like maturity, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, just to understand, like, we have different ideas because we're not all from the same place. And I know.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just wondering, like.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Like, if it happens, like, mm-hmm. if it happens, let's say, like, have you ever even been in, like, in a scenario where, like, someone said something to you and you didn't find it funny, and maybe the person found it funny?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think that that's also kind of an indicator. Well, arguably, the situation with our culture is kind of weird right now, and a lot of people tend to perceive way more things personally,
mm-hmm.
even though it probably wasn't about them in the first place.
Exactly.
But there is this atmosphere mm-hmm. of it pays some sort of social dividend to be outraged about something. And so the most innocent things can be perceived in the most outrageous ways. But that is not the problem of the IT industry. That's the problem of our entire current culture. So there's not really much you can do about it. We live in the era of political correctness, where it, for most part, for people, it's better to just shut up and not say anything for fear mm-hmm. of being perceived in some way that they have not intended it in the first place. Which is in some ways unfortunate, because I think there is an understanding in a group of people of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate, or at least it used to be. If you're on the same wavelength with the people you're working with, that mm-hmm. does also tend to expand not just toward technological topics, but just different things in general. And so some joke that may be perceived as very risque by some other people within that group is perfectly fine, right? And you just have that knowledge and that understanding, because, you know, if you're in that, back in the day, if you enter a new environment, you enter a new set of people that you're not very familiar with, I guess if you have problems with reading social cues, if you're on a neuroatypical side of things, as they would put it these days, mm-hmm. you could just say something wildly inappropriate the very first day, and people will kind of be like, wow, that we did not expect. But normally the process is that you kind of gradually increase the heat in a mm-hmm. sense, and once you start feeling that you're approaching the edge,
mm-hmm.
you kind of understand where the line is, and you just know it, and you just don't cross it because it's a professional thing to do. You understand the limit for banter.
Absolutely.
And you never cross it. And in Absolutely. Fact, if you have the mastery of riding the edge,
mm-hmm.
just barely pushing just a little bit past it, that's where the stuff is the funniest, right? You like a hair line away from falling off a cliff with your joke.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it's funniest. Because if you push it just a little bit further, that turns into a realm of inappropriate, and everyone's like, "Whoa, that was too much, dude." But I think now people don't signal correctly, because tiniest things cause these explosions in being offended. You can't properly tune the level of where that line is, right? And so you just don't know. Like, you can say the most innocent thing ever, and everybody's looking at you like you're some serial murderer that enjoys torturing small animals for fun. Yeah. So how do you exist in a situation like that? My personal preference is to not be in situations like that, but it's getting more and more difficult.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's kind of on a point of, you know, living and working with other people. In terms of soft skills, that's a good question. Everybody's like talking about the importance of soft skills. And I think we did briefly talk about it way back in some of our conversations when I was talking about this, the concept of just maybe I was talking with somebody else, but the concept of being genuine,
okay.
Like being genuine mm-hmm. person.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting, albeit a little bit of paradoxical explanation of what it means to be genuine. It's like, how did he put it? It's like being genuine is not being ingenuine. It's like as soon as you start trying, that's when you fail. It's kind of like very, very Zen type of thing. Like as soon as you force yourself to behave a certain way to fit in, you're not genuine anymore. That's not you. That's like your presentation to other people so they like you better. So you have to cultivate being genuine. Like, I am genuinely glad and happy to be having this conversation right now. I don't have to fake smile because I'm enjoying it. I can smile for real. And I think people can can pick up on it pretty well because we evolved that way for hundreds of thousands of years. But if I sit there like this, yes, you know, very, very interesting, yes. Like, you know, or again, if you're trying to fit in a situation and you think that if you say something or if you confirm something, people will like you better for it, but that detracts from your genuine self. And it is, in a sense, a kind of lying. Like, you know, you're presenting something to the world that isn't truly you. And it is kind of lying. And like lying is very poisonous to the soul. And the more you do it for a very benign reason of being perceived by other people slightly better, I think it's too high price to pay. Because it, you know, it's like acid. The longer you're in contact with it, the more it corrodes away from your like utmost self. And if you do it long enough, nothing is going to be left. And you're just going to be like a windsock up to the mercy of whichever way the wind is blowing. Like you don't have your own sense of who you are and like a genuine presentation to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And my advice is don't do it.
Like, but I just wanted to let you know what I think about that, because while most people say like, oh, they have been themselves, like being genuine, like, oh, this is the real me, but sometimes you have to understand like even though it's the real you, it depends. You need to fit into social. You need to, as a social being, you need to adapt yourself to a social group.
Right.
So because you're being you, because you're being genuine, does not mean like, if it makes other people uncomfortable, then what's the point of your genuinity? Like, maybe at that point, you should start looking into like, being in a social group of people that accepts that genuinity, because
you're not a $100 bill to be universally liked by everyone. Like there's still going to be some people who dislike you, and I think like on the other side of this adaptability, like a psychopath is like a perfect representation of the other side. They'll present whatever everybody else wants to see so that they can achieve their goals. Like they're the most ungenuine thing ever, because they just, oh, this person wants me to be this and say these things. I'll do it. I don't care. Because like for them, it's not really something that they consider, right? You want me to reinvent myself and be a completely different person? Should you like me better? I'll do it because I can gain something out of it. So, and like, obviously you don't want to go too far in that direction. You don't want to be at everybody's whims, because you're still a person. And if you're trying to please everyone, there is no guarantee that they're trying to do the same in return. So at some point in time, in like a game theoretic sense, you have to stop, because past that point, everybody's just taking advantage of you. And that's not a good situation either, right? Because again, if you're letting everybody else dictate who you are, you erase yourself in a sense, and that's not going to give you long-term happiness and satisfaction. You always feel resentment, because you can't just become what other people expect you to become on a whim and not feel some degree of resentment towards these people, because they are forcefully changing you into something you don't necessarily want to be. You're just doing it to fit in temporarily, right? I think I'm kind of talking about it in like a very, very serious sense. Obviously, it's like nobody's that Machiavellian talking jokes by the water cooler, trying just to kind of figure out where everybody else is. But that's the idea. Like, you have to figure out your boundaries. Mm-hmm. And there are things that you just don't let other people to cross. And I find that in a lot of ways, I think people respect you more if you are willing to clearly articulate what those boundaries are, because that kind of removes a lot of guessing out of it. And because in a lot of ways, in any social group, people will test you ultimately. It's like, do you belong with us? So they'll be pushing you. And if you are accepting everything they push your way and offer no pushback, even though on the outside it may look all polite and nice, they might think, without even realizing it themselves, oh, that person is a complete pushover. I have no respect for them. They might not verbalize it. They might not say it like that. But I think evolutionarily, that impression will be there, and they'll treat you differently for it. And you can also make a mistake of like overcompensating and reacting too much. Like, you're pushing back way too hard. Like, it has to be proportionate, right? Like, the amount of pushback has to be proportionate to the amount of, I don't know if I should call it aggression, but like, you know, they're pushing toward you, you're pushing back. But like, if they poke you playfully, you can't just like punch them in the face. That's disproportionate. Everybody will not consider it as appropriate. I don't know. We kind of gotten a little bit too esoteric on that one. But do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, I do get what you're saying. But I think like there should be a balance. Like, while I'm up for like genuinity, and I'm up for like, you know, being firm and like, you know, like being your true self, I think you should also be sensitive to other people's feelings, and you should be sensitive to how other people perceive you, because while you're being genuine, nobody would really, not everybody understands the definition of your genuinity. For example, like, I've met people like over the course of like my career so far, like I can see how some people might have been like being their true self, and then it affects your relationship with the people around you. Like, you know, some people might not feel too comfortable to be around you for too long, just because like, you know, like you probably would make a joke that would be offensive,
right?
Or maybe like you probably are difficult to even talk to in the first place, because you probably yell at the slightest chance about things. But while that is your true self, you being able to express your frustrations, or like be able to express your pain in like some form of jokes or like different things, that might be your true self. But I really think like, because there are people around you, mm-hmm. it's also good to measure, check your sensitivity to other people.
Yes, no, that's true. I see what you're saying. I guess what I was implying is, like, there are rules of professional conduct of being polite and mm-hmm. courteous to other people. But being polite and courteous does not necessarily mean that you are just willing to take whatever coming from other people. Essentially, being polite and courteous is like the barest minimum. So if I don't have emotional regulation to kind of deal with my stress and I start screaming at people, maybe I'm being genuine, but that's not a professional behavior. So what I mean is, you still have to be within the confines of mm-hmm. professional behavior, right? So, like, there's things that you just don't do because why would you, right? Like, do not be impolite. Like, screaming at somebody is not polite. And, like, okay, maybe, like you say, oh, people don't feel comfortable around you because you're telling inappropriate jokes. But that's what I said, right? Like, there used to be ways of determining where the line is. And if you want to remain professional, just don't cross it, right? It's not like, when I talk about being your genuine self, it's like, if people around you are saying something that you completely disagree with, but you kind of sit there and nod just to fit in, that's where you start diverging from that. You can just not react to it and not say anything and keep your opinions to yourself. It is, in theory, a form of, like, self-censorship, but that's fine. Again, you're staying within the domain of being, like, professional.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, like, just, like, don't talk politics at work, because why would you, you know? It's not going to end well. There's, like, plenty of subjects that you shouldn't bring up mm-hmm. unless, again, you know where, like, it's kind of funny, right? Because, like, if you're in a professional environment and people don't bring these things up because they are also in the professional environment and because nobody really knows other people's opinions on things, there are certain subjects they're not going to bring up. Like, they're not going to bring up politics, for instance, because people think all sorts of different ways and your political opinions might be very conflicting with other people's political opinions. And because nobody really professed them, or at least they shouldn't have, if they're professional, they shouldn't have brought it up in the first place. Nobody knows. So nobody has a desire to bring it up because they might think, oh, I can say something and a lot of people are going to get mad. But then if you have a relationship that's outside of work where you get to know people more closely, and, you know, again, these things take time, right? You have to kind of, you know, it's almost like when you see dogs on a walk and they kind of start, like, sniffing each other, trying to figure each other out. Like, there's this process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't just immediately, sometimes in some rare cases, you see a person and you just, like, immediately click with them. You understand that they understand you and you understand them, and, you know, you can talk on all sorts of different subjects, but that's pretty rare. And so usually these things take time because, again, people are not, especially these days, they're, like, not very willing to volunteer what they actually think, because sometimes there's very many unpopular opinions these days that get you in a lot of trouble, even though there's nothing particularly outrageous about the opinions in themselves. It's just, like, they don't align with the consensus these days, whatever that may be. So people are more reserved now. It's harder to get them to open up. And it creates this atmosphere of kind of detachment and not mistrust, but somewhere bordering that. It's like, why are you asking me these things? Like, why do you want to know? Whereas before, it's like, I just want to learn about you as a person because you seem interesting. Now it's like, ooh, why are you asking me all these questions? Like, what are you going to use that information for? And I don't know if that's always been the case. We just have, like, a different, we're just sort of seeing it through a different prism. or it's some uniquely new thing that's happening right now. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, it's hard. I have several people from my previous jobs that I keep in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we meet occasionally, not as often as we'd like, probably. And, you know, we share things. But for a lot of people that you work with, especially if you work in person, you become friends with them because, you know, you spend a lot of time together out of necessity, out of external factors. You know, it's like having having friends in school. You have mm-hmm. school friends because you're in school all day, almost every day. And because you go to school, you likely live geographically close to one another. So you or you like play the same sports. Like you have all of these common things that are imposed on you. And if you're social, like if you're not antisocial, you'll become friends with them just because what else are you going to do? Are you just going to sit all there by yourself and not talk to anybody? But as soon as those external circumstances are lifted, like you graduate, like how many friends, your best friends that you were best friends in high school, like do you still keep in touch? For 99% of people, the answer is probably going to be no, because the circumstances of their friendship were external. And the same thing happens for in a job. You're there together for various reasons, but you're not there to be their friends. You're there to do the job. Being their friends is a consequence that might or might not materialize.
I agree with that, because I think I was reading somewhere like that about, you know, not being able to keep like a relationship outside like of a social setting or like an environment like school or stuff like that. But the thing is like, what I really think about that is like, I think it depends on like different stages of life as well, because when the friends you made in high school or like even in college or university, it might be difficult to keep up, especially like if you feel like you are not all going towards the same direction in life, and everybody has like they will go different ways at some point. So that might be one of the factors, or maybe also like, like you said, like it was just like an environment. So like, mm-hmm. once the environment is done, like, but
your paths converged. And then at some point they start diverging, and your values become different, and you know your opinions on things are different. So it's this ongoing effort. You have to actively maintain that relationship, exactly. which is hard. And they also say like the older you become, the more difficult it is to make new friends. And a lot of people, like once they hit their 50s. A lot of people end up like very lonely because, you know, they don't really have anybody to talk to, which is really bad for anyone's mental health, you know. So if you have that that friend that you haven't talked to in a while, you know, send them a line. You know, I remember being in a situation where it's like I have all of the people that I know, mm-hmm. and we used to have a fairly close friendship a bunch of years back,
mm-hmm.
but then I don't know, the school was over or we moved to a different parts of town. So mm-hmm. we don't talk that much. And I always feel kind of like, well, why would I impose myself on this person? I haven't talked to them in so many years. It feels kind of weird, right? To just be like calling them up and be like, hey, how are you doing? But I think that's not, it's not true, because sometimes if I were to meet that person at some party through some common friends, we'd be like, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, like I'd be like glad to see them. So,
mm-hmm.
but I don't do it as much as I probably should be. And I don't know if they have the same idea on their end, but they're not doing that thing either. And so these relationships slowly kind of start drifting apart, but it's the same thing, right? Maybe we were friends out of some external force. And now that that force is no longer being applied, there's no impetus to remain friendly.
But But I think friendship is a very it's a type of relationship that you need something, no? Like, I don't know, like something, you need to have something in common to be, maybe it's just me, or maybe I need to learn more about like how to build relationships like this, because I feel like someone can be your friend, but you need to have even like relation, maybe even romantic relationships, but you need content in the relationship. Like, if there is no content, it's difficult to hold it together. Like,
yeah.
So, for example, like, let's say, like, when you were in school, you were always going to the library together, like, studying together, or, like, maybe you attended the same classes. Like, you had something going on together.
Yeah.
And after school, like, you, one person wants to continue to, you know, in a certain path, another person probably wants to do something else, maybe like in creative, become a musician or something, like, you know. So like, it's two different paths now. Like, while this person is talking about, you know, the frustration, both of you can't relate anymore. So like, I think there are several factors to these things, but yeah, it's true, like, it's difficult when you also get older to make friends, because like,
yes,
because you don't even have as much time as you had when you were younger. Like maybe now you have more responsibilities.
Yeah, I think other thing too that just came to my head, like, I'm not a social media user. I haven't been for a really long time, but I am broadly aware of what's happening there. And I think that this other thing, you know, there's like this idea of like parasocial relationship. Like, if you watch some YouTuber online or vlogger or something, and you know a lot of kind of intimate details about their life because they broadcast it for everybody to see, and you start feeling like you know this person, you're like friends with this person because you know all of their life, right? Yeah. You're appraised on everything they do and who they talk to and what movies they watch, so you feel like you know them, but you don't. There's nothing there, like, it's completely fake, it's virtual. And on the same level, you have all of your friends. You're friends with them on Facebook. You see the photos that they post. You see notes, like, you see something that they write, or restaurants they go to, or vacations they go to. And I think to the degree the same thing happens. You feel appraised enough about their life, so you don't actually have to reach out. Like, why would they want to call somebody and be like, hey, how you been? How was your vacation? When I just saw like 50 pictures from their vacation, literally. And it's like, yeah, that looks good. Like, I don't need them to retell me the same thing that I just saw on their social media feed. So even though with social media, we're way more connected, at the same time, we're way more disconnected because that personal connection is gone. It's all virtual. Like, I know about their life through the pictures that they post, but...
Yeah, true.
And that also, the other side of it is, people are not, well, some people who will, the drama seekers, they will post negative things into their social media, but most people usually post positive things. They post good things that happened to them, the vacation they went to, a nice meal they had at the restaurant, I don't know, their kids are growing up, they're really proud of them, they post their pictures, but like, they're not gonna post things about how somebody's like struggling at work or having difficult time paying their bills. So you see very skewed perception of their life. You see the positive sides of their life. And like, before, if you just meet with a person and talk sort of one-on-one, they would tell you about not only the good things that are happening in their life, but maybe the some difficult things that are happening in your life. And, you know, you can commiserate and you can say, hey man, you know, I know the feel, but, you know, things will likely get better. You know, you can say all of these things and have a more complete picture. And that person, having someone to confide in, they might feel better to, you know, unburden their soul. You know, people used to go to confession for stuff like that, right? Unburden your soul of things that bother you.
And absolutely.
Now there is the half of it. And the good half of it is presented to everybody. So that connection is purely virtual. And the bad part you keep within yourself and brood. So that can't be good either, you know. And people don't go to confession anymore, at least not in the same numbers as they used to, right? And that's why I think that probably contributes to like the overall mental health situation. Everybody seemingly is just not having a great time right now. Like, it's weird.
Yeah. It's the life, it's the time we live in right now. So
yeah.
Everyone is like dealing with different things in their mind, but it is what it is.
It is what it is.
So these are all the things I wanted to talk to you about today. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate your time for giving your opinions and like making yourself available. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mo. No, I had good time. I snuck in a couple of rants in there that have been bothering me lately, but I think we talked about good topics as well. So hopefully people will enjoy. So if you are watching it, I hope you're enjoying. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.